From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, October 25th, 2024.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
Today, on the one-year anniversary of the Lewiston mass shooting, the city and the state as a whole are still carrying the burden of loss and trauma. As the Lewiston community pauses to remember the victims and honor survivors, two local artists are offering their own contribution to the public memory of the tragedy, an installation crafted from items left behind at impromptu memorials. At the Museum of Innovation, Learning, and Labor in Lewiston, artist Tanya Hollander steps into a small room filled with 261 empty bouquet sleeves suspended from the ceiling.
You can spin them. I love the sound that they make when they hit each other. It's very gentle.
A small fan hidden near the ceiling pushes a soft breeze through the room, just enough to send the plastic sleeves twisting on their gossamer threads. They catch the light and cast ghostly shadows on the wall. They dangle alone or in bunches, big and small, some with petals still smushed inside them. They're all different, Hollander says, but also the same.
And I think that that really represents the community, right? We're all grieving together, but there are these moments of individuality in how we grieve.
After the shootings, Hollander, who lives in Auburn, watched as impromptu memorials sprouted up outside the bowling alley and the bar. She says she felt drawn to the bouquet sleeves in particular. At the first snowfall of the year, and with the help of the Lewiston Public Works Department, she gathered them by the dozen.
They had this emotional value to me that I don't think I totally understood at the time. But I really like the idea of recycling something that was meant to be trash and making something beautiful out of it.
The recycling of tragedy has become a theme of the museum's work since the shooting, says director Rachel Ferrante. A space that has been dedicated to housing artifacts from the area's former textile, shoe, and brick-making industries is now also home to countless objects left at the makeshift memorials for those lost a year ago.
We're never probably going to be able to display everything that we collected. It's just too much.
And she says the collection keeps growing as residents drop off all manner of items with some connection to the shootings. A painted banner, a miniature cornhole board, a bowling pin with the names of the 18 victims written in black marker. The museum is also gathering oral history interviews from that night, documenting an unwanted but now inescapable chapter of Lewiston history.
Saving the objects and then collecting the related stories was where we felt like we could provide something to the community.
The centerpiece, the bouquet sleeve installation, will be on display until next September. It's a collaboration between Hollander and Mia Zellner, another local artist and teacher. In the immediate aftermath of the shooting, with a shelter-in-place order still in effect and a frantic manhunt underway, Zellner drew attention by hanging over 100 cardboard hearts across town.
I felt like I had to give back something. You know, as an artist, I can't just sit with my feelings. I have to make something.
Crafting the bouquet sleeve exhibit, she says, was another step in transforming feeling into action, grieving into art. Zellner hesitates to use the word healing when talking about the impact of her work, especially, she says, given the ongoing toll of gun violence across the country. But for visitors to the museum, she wants the quiet room of empty bouquet sleeves to be an invitation to pause.
I hope that they can process in some way, they can grieve in some way, or they just are able to reflect.
One of those visitors, Rachel Goulet, who grew up in Lewiston, hesitates on the threshold before stepping into the room. All these bouquet sleeves, mouths wired open, holding nothing. It seems to catch her by surprise.
It just seems so empty. I don't know. I didn't think I'd feel like this.
Her cousin, Diane Belairgin, stands at her shoulder.
You feel the the emptiness of what is left.
18 lives lost. And all that is left, she says, is the air, a final breath. Central Maine Medical Center in Lewiston is the first hospital in the state to use new AI technology in disease identification. Through a collaboration with pathologists at Spectrum Healthcare Partners, the hospital will be able to get digital images of samples and use artificial intelligence to help identify diseases. Until now, pathologists have used tissue samples on glass slides, which then have to be physically shipped between doctors to get a second opinion or reach a specialist. Central Maine Medical Center is one of the first hospitals in the country to use this technology, says Dr. Bilal Ahmad, a pathologist with Spectrum.
So with this technology, we can actually liberate all of these slides just from the local folks here and have, you know, experts in Boston or California or Texas review cases for us on the fly.
This service should make it easier and faster to diagnose diseases, including cancers, Ahmad says. It's especially important now as there is a shortage of pathologists in Maine, and the state has seen an increase in cancer diagnoses. Angus King is among 40 U.S. senators urging the Department of Labor and Homeland Security to release the maximum number of H-2B visas for fiscal year 2025. King says winter businesses may not have the workers they need if the visa cap is not lifted. He says those businesses can cut back hours or even close without these extra workers.
This isn't replacing American jobs in any way, shape, or form. This is filling gaps in employment that aren't being filled by Americans. It's important to keep those Americans who are in those businesses employed so that they can keep putting food on their families' tables.
Last year, the federal government released 130,000 visas to help hospitality businesses across the country keep their doors open, up from 64,000. King said he spoke with the head of the Department of Homeland Security this week about the request and that it is a high priority for the 40 states who rely on temporary workers. The USDA Natural Resource Conservation Service has awarded the Wild Blueberry Commission of Maine over $15 million to help producers develop greater resilience to climate change. In recent years, wild blueberry producers have been affected by drought and late frost events, leading to dramatic fluctuations in supply. The Wild Blueberry Commission will use the money to help wild blueberry producers better conserve water with systems like improved irrigation and mulching. Executive Director Eric Venturini says the project involves partnering with the University of Maine's Department of Civil Environmental Engineering.
So we're doing sort of two things at once. We're helping to develop a workforce and a pipeline to agricultural engineering here in Maine, which is sorely needed, and also leveraging that capacity at the university to help deliver what is desperately needed to our producers.
Venturini expects funds to be available to producers as soon as next April, but encourages producers to visit their local Natural Resources Conservation Service office to indicate their interest as soon as possible. The ambassadors of three Francophone countries visited Deering High School in Portland today, highlighting the growth of the French-speaking population in Maine, driven in recent years by burgeoning African immigrant communities. Diplomats from Gabon, France, and Central African Republic spoke with teachers and students, many of whom speak French as a first language at home. Nathalie Goury, French teacher at Mount Ararat High School in Topsom, says the more recent arrivals have breathed new life into Maine's long-standing connection with the French language.
These newly arrived refugees have joined with the Franco community and the Acadian community to revitalize French and thus created a renaissance of the language in our state.
But Goury says Maine struggles with a shortage of qualified French teachers, and she says foreign language education should be emphasized in lower grades because students are often able to better master a language when they begin learning it at a younger age. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow morning at 8 for Weekend Edition with Carol Bousquet. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.